The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1685. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
Diving into all three phases of the game, breaking down Auburn and Baylor. It's Tuesday, and you're on the line.
Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Christian Griffin and Tripp Upton.
Welcome in, welcome in. It is the Tuesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and that Radio Alabama app. I'm Christian Griffin here with you in the studio. Another warm one. Not quite hot, only upper 80s, and so maybe we can start to say it's cooling off. When's the false fall going to get here to build confidence? Hopefully that false fall can at least start on Saturday afternoon, Saturday evening. I don't think there'd be too many people in Auburn and Opelika that would complain if you at least got a little bit of it for the next week or so, maybe next couple of weeks. That was the biggest complaint. I could think of worse ways to go about things here this afternoon. Man, a lot to get to here on the show. Going to have a lot of fun diving into, again, both sides of the football, offense and defense, a little bit of special teams in there as well. We got looks outside of the SEC. We got looks outside of Auburn. We got some audio that we're going to play for you. And so a really, really jam-packed show, a very, very fun show, an engaging show here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. I mentioned it. I'm Christian Griffin. Across from me is my man, Tripp Upton. Happy Tuesday, sir. Hopefully all as well.
Yeah, happy Tuesday. Just getting ready for Friday night, getting ready for Saturday with some Auburn Tiger football under the lights both days. And so I know I'm excited, and we continue on here back in the office a little bit more today. Labor Day has come and gone. Football for week one has come and gone. We're going to be reacting all to it right here on ESPN 106.7, Christian.
Man, very, very excited for what today's show looks like. And I think more so just because Mondays during the off season, there's so much that happens over the weekend to where there's always stuff to talk about. There's always drama to talk about. There's always something in terms of what either the SEC has to say, something that goes on outside the SEC. The off season again, controlled by Texas Tech and Brendan Sorsby in the first half, LSU, Lane Kiffin, and the SEC in the second half. But a show like this today is so fun because this is what truly gives me the feeling that college football is back, because we got to break down our opening thoughts yesterday about Auburn and Baylor. Now we get to go into the meat and potatoes, if you will. We get to go into the nitty-gritty, dive into some of the analytics, some of the numbers, both on the defensive side of the football, the offensive side of the football, and again, just the idea that we are breaking down football and talking about Auburn, talking about the SEC, talking about the game last night. Again, a whole lot to dive into here this afternoon. The phone lines are open for the entirety of today's show if you would like to be a part of it. 334-321-1390. Ascend Medicine text box is always open as well at 334-784-1685. Again, 334-784-1OTL. And the text box is brought to you by Ascend Medicine, because at Sun Medicine, you get VIP medical care with direct access to your personal physician. With over 20 years of emergency room experience, Dr. Eric Sen is bringing personalized, access-driven health care right here to the Plains. You can find out more. You can become a member today by visiting senmedicine.com. That's SENNmedicine.com. Appreciate Mr. Sen and the Sen family, yeah, for all that they do here with us on ESPN 106.7, as well as our high school coverage partner, which you mentioned just a few moments ago, Auburn High School, Lee Scott Academy. The Warriors happy to be back at home. Auburn High continuing their treacherous road trip.
Oh, yeah. Enterprise.
Down to the Wildcats here this weekend.
I've been calling it a cat fight. I'm hoping that it'll just be a The road team comes in, smashes some stuff, and leaves. But you know, we'll have to see what happens down there. I'm excited. I got to get a picture with the boll weevil. That's kind of my goal when we get down there. I got to talk to Jack and see what time he wants to leave. But that would be kind of cool. Or like the one at the unnamed hamburger restaurant with the clown.
Is there a specialty one down there?
Yes, they have a statue of the boll weevil dressed up like the clown corporate mascot. Oh, I gotta show you this.
I did not know that.
Oh, it's so cool. Hold on.
It's gonna do great things for the radio side of things. But yeah. While you're pulling that up, again, you're talking about a cat fight. We'll be able to dive into even more of LSU and Clemson, and then even more on top of that. And inside of the cat fight versus, oh wow, that is
the Hamburglar.
Definitely something. Wow, that's funny right there. But we'll be able to dive into LSU versus the SEC and how LSU won on Saturday night, and you thought that maybe that was going to be the biggest drama that took place this weekend. No, the drama just decides to continue as the SEC escalates their threat against LSU and possibly kicking the Tigers out of the Southeastern Conference. You usually don't see that after a big-time win that brings you all sorts of publicity. I thought that any publicity was good publicity. Apparently, Greg Sankey and the Southeastern Conference not too fond of some of the comments that Lane Kiffin had to say, especially at halftime with Holly Rowe dropping the, yeah, look at the score. Imagine what we could do if we had pro players. We don't even have those on the field. And it's like, ooh.
Yeah. I mean, looking at their signing, I think they even cited institutional control for this one. So very, very interesting stuff from LSU. And again, I agree with you, Greg Sankey, not too fond of the Tigers now.
Yeah, so LSU versus SEC. We're going to recap a little bit of the game last night between SMU and Florida State, the old school football type of game, what everybody grew up on, because, you know, we're just going back to old school football, and so why not just play a game that represents it? And then again, defensive talk in hour number one. We're going to focus a little bit on the good as well to end hour number one before we play some of Golish, his audio from yesterday afternoon, and then one of our favorite graphs to look at. It's the quote, did we really get beat that bad? And goes to show you the wins and the losses for every team and how there's a couple surprises in there, including Auburn and Baylor, for what that looks like in terms of did we get beat that bad. We'll look at the AP Top 25 as well. And so, again, a jam-packed show for you. Appreciate everybody for being here with us. And looks like we begin today's show to the phone lines.
Yes, we head to the phone lines to start this today's episode of On the Line, as we have Andy on the line, my friend. Happy Tuesday to you. How are you doing?
Hey, good. How are y'all?
Doing good. Well. How about yourself?
Oh, man. I was at the game. Even was on TV. So had a great time. And the staff at the Georgia Dome were awesome. The Auburn fans were awesome. Then you start talking about the villain, as I call him. So my brain starts wandering. Y'all know I just get used to me calling in when we're talking about Lane, because he is, you know, I've said it over and over. You know, he's a bad dude. Did you watch the video? I've heard he was just joking around with the kid, but after the game, like, he ran and, like, shouldered a kid.
Yes.
The young student.
I do believe that is his son's best friend, and so take that for what you will. But still, one of those, like, okay, unless you dive into it, not necessarily the best look.
Well, I had a kind of a he thought he was the boss. He was the boss for me, but kind of kicked the door in with his foot and just, you know, just like, what are you doing, dude? Like, there's people like that. And that's exactly who Lane Kiffin is. Just a narcissist, just thinks he's a God's gift to the world. But no, I mean, someone doing that to a kid usually doesn't get on my nerves unless it's him, you know?
Sure.
But anyways, I just want to call. It's so funny how contrarian people are. I grew up my whole life where we'd watch an Auburn game, and there's always that one person that goes, well, what about this? You know, but usually 99% were like, you know, we did this good, we did this bad. And everyone's just so dang contrarian. I was there with my eyes. We did not look good. We had our moments, but Baylor had more of them, and that's scary. But on the same side, it's the first game. There's many of Cam Newton games I went to that are like, we're going to get beat. You know, like, we look awful. And then Cam would pull it off at the last minute. I mean, we're getting beat by Kentucky. Kentucky had us dead to rights
Yeah,
to the end of that game. So I'm not trying to panic, But I'm just saying, all you Auburn lovers out there, which I am, but, you know, just with Bitcoin, anything like that. Like, Bitcoin goes up and down. Don't say it's going to go to a million. Don't say it's going to go zero. Let's be realistic about it. I don't care what the number says. I don't care how many completions. I guess when you're playing smaller team play calls, you know, only the small teams come in Auburn and do these screens and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And thank God that reverse worked. You know, because usually you just pull that out when you're either kicking butt or getting your butt kicked.
Right.
And that reverse worked, but oh my gosh. But anyways, being there, it was great. But I mean, nine out of 10 times we'd have lost that game. I mean, it was great. Like, you know, everyone's saying we're finding ways to win and lose, so I'll give them that. But I was very surprised at how overall, I wouldn't say poorly, but, you know, an average of a 5 or 6, we played, did a 4. And, you know, we're all hoping for a 7 for once. So
sure.
Maybe we'll get there, but definitely not, you know, encouraging, especially when you see a good team, you know, like the villain. Maybe it takes a villain to come in and put up 51 points against a good team. Like, it just sucks when you don't see things clicking. We couldn't get the ball running. Of course we had that one run. Of course quarterback had that one run, but there's no consistency. And I'm not always saying blame the coach. I mean, it is 90% the players. We're just in a culture where we blame coaches and we call 23-year-old kids. And we don't want to hurt the kids' feelings. The million-dollar kids that are making more money than all of us, and they're not even starting. So, anyways, hope it gets better. Not, you know, definitely not down on the luck or anything, but just stop thinking Bitcoin's going to go to a million and stop thinking it's going to go to zero. Just be realistic about the Auburn team.
Yeah.
All right, we're going.
Appreciate you, Andy, for getting us started here this afternoon. I think it's a good point of being – again, you talk about that just from the emotional standpoint of like the day-to-day, right? Don't let anything plateau. Don't let anything just completely peak. I mean, ride the roller coaster, but don't let it hit the extremes. And I think that what he said is very, very important just from the standpoint of Auburn fans were looking at the expectations, and many Auburn fans had this being a higher scoring game and B, a more comfortable win. Yet that being said, if Auburn fans, as Andy said, were expecting a 7 or an 8 in terms of what this looked like offensively, defensively, just as a team for everybody in orange and blue, yet you only saw a 4, if I told you that going into the game on Saturday, you tell me that Auburn loses. Auburn doesn't win this game a couple of years ago. Even last year, Auburn was 0-6 in one-score games. And so, again, I think that there's a lot of people that are clinging to the hope that are also not shying away from the anxiety, the anxiousness. Dak called in yesterday and was talking about how Saturday's game looked a lot like South Florida's stats did against other P4 teams, and how, again, when you see a line like that multiple times, it's not just a fluke. It is a little bit of a trend. And so, again, I think that there's a lot of things that are going to continue to be cleaned up. I do think it makes things a whole lot easier when you are able to lean back in your chair, whether that's in our chair, whether that's on the ride home, or whether that's in the lazy boy in your living room, and you're able to take a deeper sigh of relief because you're 1-0. Again, I think that is the biggest thing that I will choose to cling to, and whether that's just the fan in me or whether that is the hope for change, probably a little bit of both, but I will choose to be happy this week based off of the amount of weeks I have not been happy over the past handful of years watching Auburn football.
I think that that's a very good point where you just have to look at what Auburn has been and what we want Auburn to be, and you have to realize that it is very, very, very rare for a team to go from bad to good in a year. We've only seen it really with Kurt Cignetti in Indiana. And that, I think, is a...
Auburn fans look at 2012 to 2013.
As
but
well.
Different
sure,
day and age.
Sure, sure. In the NIL era.
Yeah.
Let's caveat it there. Where you go from a team that is bad to elite and to a national championship level team, which Auburn can be. But I think at the end of the day, you need it to be able to be... to learn how to win. You see guys that have problems with that across college football. Coaches, players...
you know, we're going to talk a little bit about SMU FSU later, and that was kind of an example of that, where one quarterback knew what to do to win, one quarterback maybe hasn't been in that scenario a lot in his college career. That kind of stuff matters. Auburn is learning how to win. It will take a little bit of time, and I'd rather be doing it against Baylor and early in the season than the Iron Bowl, than Georgia, where you don't, if you have an opportunity to win, you don't take it.
Appreciate you for calling in, Andy, getting us started here on this Tuesday afternoon. You can call in as well, 334-321-1390. Or any quick hitters, any thoughts you have, send them us, or send them to us in the Send Medicine text box at 334-784-1685. That is really interesting, just the stock side of things. And I know that Andy is calls in and gives us those types of ideas, but looking at this Auburn team as kind of a stock where you're going to have the ebbs and flows and you're going to have the trends, I think that's very interesting to follow this year for the Tigers.
Right, and I think even the point of, like, they beat a decent team. The stock went up this week,
yeah.
And I think a lot of people might not like that, because you look at the peak high earnings in 2010 and 2013 and 2017, and that's what you expect from Auburn. But in actuality, this is a stock that's on the rise, and maybe it might not be as sharp as you like, but it is rising, so it is a prudent investment.
I think it's a good point. Again, we'll dive more into what you're talking about here, especially diving into a little bit more on the defensive side of things.
Yeah.
Here coming up in just a little bit, and not anything crazy, and it sucks and it hurts to have to start our show just with the SEC and LSU, and so not a big time. It is a big time update, but it feels as if it's one of those things you hear about it so many times that by the time you read the article, it's just kind of like, all right, I'm kind of numb to the situation of the SEC and LSU just barking back and forth at one another. But the SEC has filed an amendment to its federal lawsuit against LSU earlier today on Tuesday in hopes of asserting its legal authority to expel the school from the league. The SEC said in its new complaint, which was filed in the Alabama federal court, that its 16 presidents will meet on Thursday to, quote, decide whether to terminate LSU as a member of its institution. According to the league rules, the group needs a 2/3 vote to boot a school from its conference. It says that on Tuesday it amended this lawsuit, quote, to protect the right of the conference and its member institutions to govern themselves. This goes back to the thing that I started today's program with, of the publicity that LSU and the SEC got from not only the drama, but for Lane Kiffin to go and handle business against the godfather of Dabo Swinney and the last hope of old school college football. It's not going to happen. This is not going to happen. You're telling me all of a sudden LSU doesn't have to split revenue share? You're telling me that LSU can go and join Notre Dame in a conference-less conference and play whoever the you know what they want to play?
Which
all
of the teams in the SEC would try and get LSU on their schedule.
It's just I refuse to believe that it would happen. And whether this is right or wrong, again, on the moral side of things, is not necessarily as much of what we're diving into, because for better or for worse, mostly for worse, college football doesn't stand on morals and ethics anymore. And so that side of things is not necessarily worth the conversation. So to saying that it's protecting the right of the conference, LSU has the most publicity in college football right now. If the SEC is going to shy away from that, that is very anti-SEC of everything they have ever done.
I just don't see how in a world that they vote to do this. Like,
I think this is much more of a threat to let you know, hey, we're going to be there. You better stay on the straight and narrow. You better not wander anywhere, Lane Kiffin. And
you know, and I understand their point of the lack of institutional control. I do think that they should be censured for this. I do think, at the end of the day, that no matter what happens this year, they're going to vacate the wins. And I know that vacating wins doesn't mean anything because the banner still stands, but
oh, yeah, you're going to take away the national championship. You're not going to take away the $50 million that we made and the ticket sales and everything like that. I mean,
but I think that they, you know, there needs to be some kind of repercussion. I just don't know if it's punishing the athletics of LSU, where, yeah, Will Wade stinks. Yeah, Kim Mulkey ain't the greatest. Yeah, Lane Kiffin ain't the greatest. But, like, you're going to go punish the LSU gymnastics team and make them hop on planes to go play in another conference? to be able to – you're going to punish them. They're going to make them play in worse facilities because they're not getting that SEC network revenue when they have these gymnastics meets, when they have these tennis matches, when they have these soccer games. You're punishing everyone just because the football team is doing the wrong thing and the basketball team is doing the wrong thing. It just makes
it
unfortunate.
Paul.
But football, I know. And that is – again, that's just frustrating to me. And I'd love to hear your opinion on that. It's like the – is it worth it if you cut the decision? You can kick LSU out of the SEC, but you got to kick all sports out, and no matter who and what other sports it has a repercussion for, you're getting rid of the big bad Lane Kiffin from your conference. I just don't think you should.
Just gets to the point of you feel like it's, I guess I can't even say one cat or one dog, but just chasing its tail. You feel like you're just going to keep going in circles. Nobody's going to agree with anything. If they vote out LSU, I mean, I guess I don't want to make a promise. I don't want to make a guarantee that they won't, because for all you know, all of the other things that I thought would happen have not happened. So just a wild world that over everything, this is now going to take precedent over what Lane Kiffin and what LSU did in Baton Rouge on Saturday night. And I think that, again, the morals put to the side, the fact that a court case and the court law and the SEC is now basically Allen Iverson stepping over LSU, taking away the publicity of their win, I think that is what is frustrating, just in terms of, man, can we just go play ball?
It's week one. Games have happened, and we have
some teams are 2-0, and this is where we sit.
Yeah, and instead we're worried about, you know, again, court filings and Baton Rouge and Birmingham. Let's just play. Can we just put this on hold till next summer? Like, can we just go? Okay, you know what? Just pause. LSU, don't put anybody in. SEC, don't vote them out. Let's remove the scenario. Let's get all the way through College World Series, back to the talking season, and then you do this again. Give us something to talk about, but don't have it affect us right now. I want to talk about college football. Let's talk about college football, Christian.
And we're going to do that when we come back, because we work our way from Louisiana State to Florida State in a game last night that was a little bit more of an old school style of football. No iPads, no helmet communications, just like the good Lord intended. Just 11 guys lining up and playing hard-nosed football. That's what it's about. Florida State, SMU, we dive into that before we talk into Auburn defense. We're just underway here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Give us a call, 334-321-1390, or shoot us a text at 334-784-1685. We're back after this.
You're on the line with Christian Griffin and Trip Upton. Be a part of the show by calling 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1685.
All right, we're back here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Appreciate everybody for being here with us. And we do want to dive into SMU and Florida State. But, again, it's so funny, just our thoughts that happened during the commercial break. And it's almost like we need a, I don't want to say a hot mic, but we need a microphone on during the breaks to just help us remember all of the things that we talk about. One of them being, how funny would it be, because we know about Jaden Daniels and the number five and how he basically said, you know what, because you didn't retire number five, LSU, you will not use my name, you will not use my number, you will not use my logo, anything like that. And how LSU was like, oh, okay, we won't do it then. And they went from it's 6 days until game day to it's four plus games or days until game day to 4 days. And just continuing to basically win the petty war. But how funny would it be if the LSU Tigers were like, okay, SEC, you no longer can use our logo. You can't use our Heismans. You can't use our highlights. You can't use anything. And sorry, imagine, because you want to kick us out, even if you don't, we're basically going to isolate ourselves because we want to, and you can't do it. I guarantee that the SEC would hurt more than LSU would.
Yeah, I mean, think about how many,
at least right now, in terms of, again, conferences not having a lot of power.
Think about how many, like, because I have a buddy of mine that does a lot of stuff with college merchandise. He has a college merchandise. I can't say it because he's not a sponsor yet, but he has some LSU stuff as well, funny enough. But he has told me a lot about how much these like marketing and these like copyright brands and guideline, the branding departments at these universities, especially LSU, are insanely like strict.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine every single T-shirt that's got LSU's logo, every single hat, everything that has any reference to Louisiana that is through the SEC now has to be, you can't make money off that anymore. You can't sell that anymore. Imagine the financial loss on a lot of these businesses and a lot in the SEC having to basically buy that off the market, remake it, put it out there just without that orange and or that yellow and purple like logo on there.
I don't know. I thought that would just be that'd be funny if we're getting if we're in a world of just pettiness, why not just do that? If you're that would be totally something that Lane Kiffin and that entire athletic department would choose to do. Did get a text in the Send Medicine text box, which you can always text in at 334-784-1685 that says, I can now amend my argument from last week. Lane Kiffin saved college sports by pushing it towards conference governance, a much more feasible and sustainable model than one requiring congressional approval.
That's a good point. Who sent that? Whoever it is, thank you. If you are a named listener, but regardless, you are a hero because that is a great take. Imagine if Lane Kiffin, the one guy that everyone would believe is acting as an agent of chaos, is really just following Greg Sankey's
orders.
Actually
just doing this all for to show what's wrong with college athletics. And a year from now, he sits there and he's like, "Look, guys, I did it. Look what I did."
Yeah, I mean that's not a bad take. I like that conspiracy theory.
That's crazy.
I love
Lane
that.
Lane Kiffin
I love that.
Beat the godfather of college football last week to become
the godfather of today's
Portal King becomes the just the college football, the hero, the king.
It's Laneception.
Oh, man. I saw that somebody sent a tweet out and it was like, what is somebody that you hate? It's somebody that you hate so much, but you have to continue to watch. And that's Lane Kiffin at LSU right now. And everybody called it resentertainment. And I was like, that is a perfect word to describe what Lane Kiffin is doing. You resent it, but it's so entertaining. It is resentertainment.
It's hate watch. It's hate watching. I mean, it's
hate watching with like not really caring what the end result is.
Yeah. Like again. Yeah. I think it's such a crazy thought, but I mean, imagine like they couldn't put any games on the SEC on ESPN. Like, what would happen to if they couldn't use that with their branding of like the SEC on ESPN or ABC? Could you not put LSU on there?
No, just LSU on Fox or LSU on NBC or whatever the case may be. I guarantee that wouldn't take long for a bunch of TV networks to give the LSU Tigers a call and say, "Hey, we'll plant our flag on wherever you want to play, like Notre Dame and NBC. I mean,
Fox.
We can make it to where every game is a night game in Baton Rouge. Yeah, you're telling me they wouldn't sign that?
Yeah. I mean, they want all their court. Everything in Baton Rouge needs to happen at night, apparently.
Wild to think about. So, again, just LSU and all of their comments with everything that goes on. But just for a minute or two, SMU, Florida State, an absolutely wild game before the game even truly kicked off. This was the epitome of old school football. I think a generator or a transformer exploded. And I don't know if you've seen on social media. They believe
the dude that drove into it like the night before in the substation.
Yeah.
That's
insane. I don't think that's confirmed what the reasoning was, but
I'm choosing to believe.
It was something like that. But yeah, they did the coin toss, and then all of a sudden, an hour and 40-minute delay because of a delay. And everybody was like, "Oh, it's raining," or "Oh, it's just Florida weather." Nope, it's because they couldn't get the lights to turn on. It was the epitome of old school football. Once they got some of the lights on, they said there were no helmet communications. There were no video reviews. I know that Florida State was wanting some of that back for a run from Chroma late in the second quarter. No iPads. There was no PA. There was no hearing the referees, obviously, for a little bit. I think you heard them starting in the third quarter because they were able to get more and more of that back. But a wild concept that like we look at is so foreign, but it's like, okay, but before 10, 15 years ago,
I mean,
that was just football.
That's just high school football.
You run to the sideline and get your call, and then quarterback runs back, or whoever's about to sub in, the back comes in and gives the call.
At least Rhett Lashley has learned from the Gus Malzahn of just numbers and signals, where they're doing the hand signs and the numbers and the colors. Like, at least he understands that. And I mean, it showed, because I mean, Jennings had a fantastic ball game, minus two turnovers.
The two picks. One of them was not his fault, the one in the end zone. The one downfield late in the game was just him trying to make a play that probably didn't.
He plays a little bit too much hero ball.
He puts a little too much trust in the right arm every now and then. Yet that being said, when you throw for four bills, you can get away with a little bit of that. But SMU moves to, I believe, 2-140 over the last 2 years of teams that had a -4 turnover margin. They were the second team to win in the last 2 years. So 2-140, which is absolutely insane to think about. SMU did everything possible that they could to lose this game, yet somehow everybody points back to Vegas, because SMU was a 2.5-point favorite, and they kick a field goal to win it by 3. The over-under was also 51.5, and it finished at 51. And so despite multiple turnovers in the end zone, you had multiple really, really bad penalties, a botched punt, you had jumping off sides on a field goal from Florida State that resulted in a touchdown, all of that, you still, after your quarterback goes and throws an interception, quarterback walks to the sideline and says, "You know what, coach, we got you. Our defense is going to get a stop. We're going to go march down and score." And they do. Sound familiar? Reminds me of Atlanta just a little bit. I don't know. Just thoughts on that side of things. One of the few Power 4 versus Power 4 conferences, conference games, that is. But we will take a break. We will come back. We'll flip it back to the Plains and talk a little bit of defense. We got some audio from Rayshon Pleasant, Jared Smith, as well as defensive coordinator DJ Durkin. We'll talk about what the defense did right, what maybe worries the two of us, and then some stats that maybe give you a little bit more comfort on why Auburn did what they were doing and how the grand scheme of things, when you look up, and despite the stats, despite the yards, despite everything, only 16 points were put on the scoreboard. We'll dive into that when we come back here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You're on the line, and we're just 30 minutes in. Now back to the studio with Christian Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7.
Back here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate everybody for being here with us as we turn our focus back to the Auburn Tigers and Auburn and Baylor. Because as much as the offense is getting talked about, and I think that that's is rightfully so, the defense is being discussed, and I think there's a little bit more positives, but there are some discussions on what worries some Auburn fans for what happened defensively. And so, again, your overall takeaways, I know we kind of gave our thoughts on this yesterday, but before we dive into just some of the numbers and, again, some of the audio, your thoughts from what this DJ Durkin defense looked like in week one.
Yeah, I think that the defense did what a DJ Durkin defense does. It's going to play you soft between the 20s, and then once you get in the red zone, it's good luck. I think that the throwing game did have a lot of success, and I think we're going to be able to talk about that. But a lot of that was just they were able to throw the ball, throw it in the seam, throw it open, instead of it being like a, man, he's wide open, let me just toss it over there. It was a, my guy's going to take a step, the defender doesn't know he's about to take a step, let me go ahead and put the ball there. And you saw a lot of that early, probably the first three and a half quarters. And then once Auburn started to play a little bit more aggressive and play more up, that's when you saw them attacking deep. But until then, you never saw them really push the ball down the field until that last drive, and that last two post routes, that one got dropped, one was caught near the goal line.
This team talked and got some questions about, yeah, what that pass defense looked like, especially later on in the contest when Lagway was very immobile, but got some questions from Jared Smith. Pleasant got some as well, but then DJ Durkin was asked about that a little bit, and so want to play some audio for you, about 10 minutes between the three of those gentlemen, and they doubled down on some stuff, and then we have even more stats that we want to be able to give to you as well, just to show you what that looks like and how tough it was to get to DJ Lagway in that second half. Here is Rayshon Pleasant, Jared Smith, and then Coach DJ Durkin in his press conference. Media availability yesterday afternoon.
from the defense and from the secondary that you guys can build on heading into week two?
Really just maintaining our leverage and making the plays that come to us. Dirt did a great job of putting us in position, and we just got to execute the play call and make the play.
How would you assess your play?
Say what?
Assess your play? Like, talk about just kind of how you felt like you did.
I feel like I played pretty smooth. I feel like I left a lot of money on the field. And it's a little detail as far as, like, my eyes and just knowing where I can't get beat at and just being on top of that.
How much do you feel like you've stepped into a kind of a leadership role for this secondary, especially for the corners, because you have the most experience of those guys back there?
Yes, sir. I knew me coming back here, I had the most experience coming back, and I just put a chip on my shoulder each and every day, showing these boys how I work and how I approach each and every day. And it showed in the game. And I just pray every day that them boys come along and see, like, it's all about your process and what you're doing on a daily basis. And when the game comes, it's just God going to handle the rest.
Rayshon, what was it like to play that many plays?
The strength coach do a real good job during the offseason getting us in shape. And I didn't even know I played that many snaps. And we was in the indoor, so I didn't even really know. I was just in the moment.
Jared said you guys could have gone a couple overtimes if you got prepared for it.
Nah, for real. Yes, sir. Like, practice always be harder than the game. Coach Durkin do a great job of pushing us and making it where the practice is harder. And we get to the game, it's just a breeze. We're just out there just trying to execute the calls.
How much did playing against this offense in practice prepare you guys for the tempo and all the snaps?
That was another big thing that helped us so much. We've been seeing it since spring. And like I said, the practice, them going against them each and every day has been way harder. And then the game was just a breeze.
Jared, just tell us about getting out there, making that interception stuff. How'd that feel?
Man, it felt good. Just Durkin's trusting me and to drop and stuff like that, so it felt good and to get an interception.
Did you almost have one on the play before, and did that motivate you to get that one?
I don't know if people saw that. Like, it was going through my brain. It was just slow motion. Like, I thought I had it, but it was like next play mentality. I ain't have it.
I mean, you dropped like 25 times in that game, right?
Yeah.
Tell me, I mean, there's not a lot of defensive ends that can do that. Yeah. When did you start? Did you do that in high school?
Yeah, it just like this offseason, just like preparing my body for it, like just a lot of mobility stuff in the weight room with Gio. I mean, that helps a lot.
Okay, that's absolutely the most plays you've played since high school. What was it like to have to be that many plays, that many snaps against an offense and move that fast?
I mean, that's why I came back to Auburn. Like, Keldon Fought, first round pick, Kieran Crawford, third round pick. Like, those guys are gone. Like, it's time to step up. It's time to go.
Jared, how much have you matured your work ethic? How much has it changed from maybe a year ago to now?
Man, just like I said, just having those guys in front of me, they really laid out the blueprint for me. I saw how they work. It's my time now. It's time to go.
What did you guys learn about yourselves as a defense? Because, you know, normally you have to get into a game to kind of figure some things out. What did you guys see on Saturday?
Man, how relentless we are. Like, it's next play mentality. Like, it was a lot of sudden changes in the game. Just like, defense up, okay, let's be good. Like, our motto is good, let's go.
Coach, I just want to talk about that last stop there on the two-point conversion. Great moment for Auburn. But Golish and Gordon talked a lot about you guys showing the players how they practiced and how that paid off. Can you talk about all the things that went right on that play with Eric Winters? I mean, not only does he close out, but the technique on the tackle, not letting, the offensive player stretch the ball out over the goal line. A lot of things had to go right there for Auburn to get the win. You know, how's your process produce that sort of play at the end of the game?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure what was said earlier, but for sure we made a point of, in both positive and negative ways, of how you practice is how you play. I think, I'm sure everyone's heard that statement before. It's an old coach speak, but it's real. And Eric has had a tremendous training camp. I think you saw it, how he played. I mean, that's how he practices every day. That particular play, just a picture-perfect example of, we say on defense, wrap, squeeze, drive for five. Like, he wrapped up, squeezed, and was running. Drive for five means run your feet on contact. He was going against a big body guy. That was a tight end. I mean, if he did not do all of that exactly the way you're supposed to, that ball has to go six more inches, and it's a whole different story. So just tremendous effort by him. Obviously, it was great technique and how he did it, but he did it with some violence and with great effort, and those are things we talk about all the time, especially defensively.
Justin Ferguson, Auburn Observer. DJ, Alex was in here talking about how, especially in the first half, there was some stuff with some leverage, giving up some things in the secondary. tightened it up in the second half. How did you see your guys respond and adjust? Felt like those corners especially had a lot better of a second half.
Yeah, I do. A lot of first game stuff, our message then was attention to detail. There was. It was like alignments and leverages which make a big difference because it all fits. What they start to learn is like the rush and the coverage fit one another or are supposed to. So if you're rushing a certain way, the coverage should dictate, you know, how that's going and what the timing is of the quarterback. I thought Lagway for Baylor did a really good job of getting rid of the ball. He was getting the ball quick. I mean, it was in rhythm. He wasn't hanging on to that thing. And we had to adjust our leverage and alignments in order to defend the type of routes we were getting. But, to our players' credit, they made those changes in game. I thought made adjustments and certainly, you know, cleaned some stuff up and finished better.
Jay Douglas, Auburn Undercover. Gavin Freeman for Baylor seemed to give you guys fits. What was he doing or what was the offense of Baylor doing that you guys need to adjust to? And how do you guys plan to adjust to stop Southern Miss receivers?
Yeah, I think, again, a lot of it was they were throwing in rhythm. He was getting rid of the ball. A couple of those things were alignment leverage type issues. He definitely made some great plays. We knew going into the game that he was going to be a key guy for him. He played really well. He was kind of what we thought he was going into the game. So, some of that stuff is scheme stuff. Certainly we can help our guys better with. And I think some of it is just technique. And, again, some of the first game stuff where you're like, okay, you know, we know better than this. Let's go play our style. And I'm certain our guys will clean that up.
Tyler Raley, Auburn Undercover. Coach, forcing two turnovers on the first two Baylor offensive drives of the game really set the tone for you guys and how you were able to make big plays throughout the game. How excited did that make you in terms of your defense carrying out the work that y'all had put in practice in time for the season opener?
Yeah, I mean, it's always great when you get what you emphasize, and that's something we've emphasized all, you know, since back in the winter, really, all through spring and summer, of how important it is to create takeaways. It's you know, the number one stat that correlates directly to wins and losses, right, is turnover margin. So that's a team stat, but for our particular part of it, we got to do a better job with takeaways. And so we've emphasized that a lot, and certainly to have that pay off in those first two series of the game, I think was great. Was just, you know, tremendous for our guys.
DJ, Bill Cameron with ESPN 106.7. How would you assess the play of the defensive front?
I thought our guys played well. I mean, it was 2.3 yards a carry. That's a telltale sign. And we were playing with a light box a lot of the time. I think we rolled a lot of guys in there. We played a lot of snaps, so it became – there were times in some of those drives where, you know, maybe we didn't look exactly the style we want, so we pointed those out because no matter how many plays it goes in drive, we got to play the same. But I thought overall that they did a really good job controlling that. And like I said, the pressure on the quarterback, I think we got some hits to him early, and that ball was coming out fast, and it kind of, you know, changed the way the game was going on it. But overall, I thought our guys controlled the line of scrimmage. That was a big part of it.
DJ, Elijah playing like 90 snaps and having a dozen tackles, really his first big run as a starter. How impressive was it for him to play that way kind of all the way to the end in the fourth quarter, you know, still playing like he did, you know, in the first quarter?
Yeah, can't say enough about how Elijah played and what he means to our defense. Obviously the stats and you see the plays, and he had some really physical plays on block, defeat, and tackling throughout the game. But just like his communication and really getting us in a comfortable spot, I think it's important for the whole defense. When you have a Mike linebacker that's very vocal and assertive about what he's communicating, it just puts everyone at ease. It's kind of like, you know, you get lined up faster, you can get focused on your job a lot quicker when someone's helping you that way. And I thought they just did a really good job of that, throughout the whole game.
DJ, Brian Matthews, AuburnSports.com. Cornerbacks played a lot of snaps as starters. Is that something you want to continue, or do you want to mix some more guys in there as they prove that they're able to be in there?
Yeah, the thought always, you guys all know that by now, of we want to have rotation, have guys playing and play a lot of guys defensively. I think it's a critical part to playing well and sustaining throughout a whole season, and also the development of the program. So at all spots, not just corner, that's definitely what we're looking to do. There were certain positions we rotated more than others, but that's always what guys have earned and gained. We talked earlier about how you practice is how you play. Well, how you practice determines a lot of how much you play. And I think our guys are all, you know, aware of that, or if not, are definitely learning that right now. And so we're always looking to be very competitive throughout the practice week. We'll be out there tomorrow again, and man, you know, how guys handle the reps in practice will determine how much they play and how many guys play.
Again, talking the defensive side of the football for the Auburn Tigers. And, man, again, I love hearing Coach Durkin speak because he just has the mindset and the attitude of a true defensive coordinator. He's not somebody that is full of too many words. It's more so just, this is what we did do, this is what we didn't do. And I think that builds a whole lot of, again, excitement for what this defense is going to look like. We dove into what the passing yards looked like, what the overall stats look like. But, again, it took us about a year and a half to figure out this DJ Durkin type of defense that you said it, partner. It's the bend, don't break. We'll let you do whatever you want until you get to about the 30-yard line. That's when this team forced a couple of those turnovers. That's when you get those third down stops. And funny enough, I don't know how this Auburn team is better on like third and three or third and four versus third and 147, but somehow they are. And so basically just if Auburn doesn't get tackles for loss, it makes the defense better. Who would have thought that that's like the most oxymoron opposite way of going about this? But some of the stats that I thought were really, really interesting, and it's funny that this got brought up, I believe, on the Max Roundtable earlier this afternoon, but talking about the defense not being able to get to DJ Lagway and create a whole lot of pressure in the backfield. I know that Xavier Atkins had that sack on second down on the first drive of the game for the Baylor Bears, and there really wasn't a whole lot else other than that in terms of getting to DJ Lagway, at least in the pocket, especially in that second half when he was basically planting off that right ankle, but that was really all that he was doing. According to PFF, DJ Lagway was the third fastest in time to throw in TTT this weekend, and so goes to show you that it was not a whole lot of first read, second read, third read progressions. It was, I know where I'm going with the football, and just because of how soft Auburn was choosing to play, I think that that plays a factor. Now, again, I'm obviously that was strategical and it obviously worked, but I think that's the one concern of like how long can that defense bend and not break once you get your way into SEC play?
Yeah, and it's going to be really interesting to see kind of with these new quarterbacks, how many of them hit and how many of them bust. You look at what DJ Lagway, I think, was a hit. He's going to be pretty good. I think that even without his running game, he really showed improvement as a downfield passer and being able to take what the defense gives him. But I don't think there's a chance Aaron Filo, Blaze Berlewitz, all these guys that are – Faison Brandon had a good week one, but what happens when he plays a team not named Furman?
Mm-hmm.
We'll see it this weekend in Atlanta. Are all of these guys going to be on? Because if not, Auburn's defense is going to dominate these games.
Yeah, again, I think that's where we'll choose to lay that bed right now. And again, until DJ Durkin gives us a reason not to believe, I'm not going to ask too many questions when the score looks the way that it did all of last year and the score looked the way it did on Saturday. Not going to ask too many questions. We'll take a break. We will come back and wrap up hour number one with some invisible spreads in terms of what this Baylor team would have done against some of the other competition that we saw on the field and why that should give Auburn some confidence. Wrapping up hour number one right after this.
You are on the line with Christian Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one rather quickly here on this Tuesday afternoon. Appreciate everybody for being here with us, talking on the defensive side of the football, and more so just, again, choosing to focus on the good for the Auburn Tigers. Auburn was one of only three SEC teams to play a Power 4 opponent. I think that that needs to be a big-time applause. And using artificial intelligence, the unnamed one, looking at some of these spreads, the invisible spreads that were created just – asking basically on a neutral site, if these two teams played, who would win? Who'd be the projected? What would the line be? And again, this is relatively unofficial, but Louisville and SMU were the only ones that were favored to beat Baylor. Louisville was 4.5-point favorites, SMU 3.5. Baylor was a 3-point favorite over Florida State, a 5.5-point favorite over Clemson, 13.5 versus Stanford, and 6.5 against Wisconsin. And so, I think that just goes to show you, A, this Baylor team is projected to be pretty solid, and B, I think that Auburn still deserves some of those flowers for playing a team like this in week one rather than ducking away from a competition and getting one of those 66-3 type of wins where you learn absolutely nothing about your team.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? On to the next.
simply enough. On to the next. We got Alex Golish audio to start hour number two, as well as the graph and the chart of did we get beat that badly in the AP poll top 25. All of that coming up here in hour number two.
The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1685. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
We talk the week two AP poll top 25, the did we get beat that bad graph, and Golish audio from earlier this week.
Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Christian Griffin and Trip Upton.
Hour number one in the books. We welcome you into hour number two here on this Tuesday afternoon. This is On the Line here on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and that Radio Alabama app. Hopefully everybody's doing well on the short and condensed week after Labor Day. Feels like a Monday, and so if that's the worst way to go about it, again, seems like a pretty good problem to have. Another day closer to high school football getting started, which is going to be a lot of our coverage again tomorrow on Wednesday afternoons from 2 to 3. And then another day closer to Auburn football back inside Jordan-Hare Stadium for kickoff on the Plains, taking on Southern Miss. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Appreciate everybody for being here with us. Again, a very busy show, a lot to dive into, but how exciting is it that we're able to dive into the actual results on Friday or Saturday, or for this weekend, Sunday and Monday as well. Again, some more games on Friday this week. Again, some on Thursday too. But then it feels like, again, that week two slate on Saturday is so, so nice. Something that we made jokes about last week of, I don't know if anybody's ever been able to say that the week two slate was better than the slate one of week one. That was, for some reason, difficult to say. But the second slate is very, very appetizing in terms of just the college football fan. And so we'll be able to continue to dive into as we get closer to a lot of that. But still talking all things Auburn and Baylor. We got some Golish audio that we want to play from his media availability conference coming up here in just a little bit. But in hour number one, we got to talk a lot about the defensive side of the football. We talked SMU and Florida State. We also talked about the drama of LSU and the SEC. And so all of that was in hour number one. Again, if you missed any of it, you can always go back and check it out over at our podcast center at ESPNAU.com.
In an hour number two, the AP poll came out a couple hours ago, and we're going to react to it and see who are the biggest movers and shakers across the Associated Press poll. We're going to take a look at a graph. How did we really, or did we really get beat that bad? One of our favorite graphs. And while it might not look good on the offset, Auburn's been done a lot worse. We'll also play some Alex Golish audio from post-game from Mercedes-Benz Stadium on Saturday and give you kind of what his thoughts were and our reactions were to what he had to say. But phone lines are open the rest of the show, guys. 334-321-1390. Give us a call and join in on the conversation. And then the Send Medicine text box is always open at 334-784-1OTL. Brought to you by Send Medicine. There you get VIP medical care with direct access to your personal physician. With 20-plus years of emergency room experience, Dr. Eric Sen is bringing personalized, access-driven healthcare to the Plains. Become a member today by visiting Send Medicine. That's SENNmedicine.com today.
And so we start hour number two. We're going to play Alex Golish's opening statement from his press conference on Monday afternoon. We're set to have the one from Saturday postgame, but a lot of those were his responses of, I need to go back and look at everything. I need to go back and look at the tape. This is what I saw, at least from the field. But after having a couple of days to be able to break down everything, and again, he said that he was going to do so on the way home from Atlanta. And so we'll play that for you here in just a little bit. But even just from what we heard Saturday night, at the very worst, how nice is it to hear a head coach up on the podium, whether that was on the field, accepting the old leather helmets and not seeing the joy? And I know that he had the relief and his family right there as well. Everybody's seen the handshake with him and Bear, but not having somebody that seems overly gimmicky, overly happy with a win like that, it's very much of the, yeah, we didn't play very well, we're going to enjoy this for a little bit, and we're going to get back to work. Said basically the exact same thing on Saturday evening in the post-game press conference of, I don't want to shy away from what our team did, yet that being said, I have to continue as the coach to not put us in positions to where you have to go make a play like that. So you don't have to rely on Eric Winters making a heads-up football play in the prettiest form tackle that you could ever see to keep you 1-0, to keep you undefeated, or just to win you football games. And so excited to play this for you. This was Alex Golish on Monday afternoon. His opening statement from his media availability, diving into all things Baylor and a little bit of Southern Miss in there as well. Here is the head coach of the Tigers.
All right, guys, thank you for being here. First, I want to thank our fans for showing up on Saturday. It was a cool environment, certainly a really neat way to open the season, and certainly felt like a home field advantage. So grateful to them, grateful to our band. It was a great environment to play college football in. Recap our day. I am, you watch it and watch it really critically. I'm really proud of the effort. I thought from an effort standpoint, it was certainly where you wanted it to be. I'm proud of the finish and certainly the last play, but really the drive leading into the last play offensively, and then, man, overcoming, giving up a fourth down, overcoming, giving up a touchdown, and just playing the very next play, and obviously found a way to win, which I think is as important as anything else, the ability to go find ways to win. I'm confident leaving the game in the sense that when you look at what it went like from a sideline perspective, from giving up the ball three times offensively and watching the defense react the way they did. And I'm not talking about, three turnovers leading to 3 points, which is certainly a positive, but talking about what it was like on the sideline, the energy on the sideline, the body language on the sideline, coming off the sideline, taking the field. And then on the flip, defense creating turnovers and the offensive taking the field, and feeling like you were playing for each other. That's one thing, you go through these first 8 months, and as much as you do all of these things and you preach it and you live it and you practice it, to see these guys actually stay connected, to see these guys actually play for each other and not just talk about it but actually go do it, that's where I leave the game really, really confident in at least who we are right now as a program. Obviously, offensively, 3 turnovers. In the entire really first half, we took turns of who was going to jack it up worse. And it was like one guy at a time. And, I don't know that I would take back just a ton of what we felt like we could do, but in terms of execution, it was really, really poor. And it was somebody different, something different, on what felt like certainly play to play. That's on us as coaches more than anything else to put ourselves in positions to be successful. I thought we settled in. I thought slowly but surely the fourth quarter, it looked like what you wanted it to look like. On the flip side of that, you turn it over 3 times defensively, it led to 3 points, which is absolutely huge. Defensively, third downs early, really, really poor. We settled in there and played it out well on third down as the game went. The fourth down being two of seven was really, really bad. And that was a huge point of emphasis, and it truly is just having situational awareness enough to understand leverages and coverage, to play tighter on the perimeter, and all learning moments, but certainly we should have been better. You look at it from an operation standpoint, we had three pre-snap penalties, two offensively, one critical one on defense. I would tell you that's too much pre-snap, but that is a huge point of emphasis for us as we continue to go from a penalty standpoint. And then on a special team side, I thought we punted the ball extremely well. The one pooch punt, we gave 9 yards back on a bounce. We should have caught that ball inside the 10. We had some missed opportunities in the punt return game. I thought a really, really poor decision to catch the ball where we did on the 2 yard line. And certainly set us back. We were able to overcome it, but we've got to be way better there. From a kickoff return standpoint, obviously all touchbacks on kickoff, and I thought we made good decisions with the ball kickoff return-wise in the back end. I think you sum it all up. One, I'm glad we played a good opponent week one. I think for us to find out where we are as a team was absolutely critical. I think the earlier you can find that out, the better. I was really encouraged, like I said earlier, by the way our kids reacted to the whole thing. I was really encouraged by the way that they handled each other, the positivity, this next play mentality that we have pushed to live, showed up in every way. I think from a detail standpoint on all three sides of the ball, I thought we were just okay at best, and you know the old cliche of you'll get better from week one to week two if you stress the right things. We have to. We don't have a choice. And just the urgency. And that was the one main thing from our team meeting this morning with our guys. Like, man, what you saw through summer, fall camp, and to be honest with you, even all the way back to the spring, the guys that you saw practice with urgency, train with urgency, practice and compete at a high level, those guys all played extremely well. The guys that you saw flutter up and down, and that's everything. That's from their body weights to the urgency they practice with to the urgency they show up here in the building at. You saw that too. And I think it was a huge learning lesson for our guys, because you can preach it all you want. They, once you see it in real life on tape or in person, I think it opens up your eyes a little bit. And there's a handful of guys that we challenged in a huge way. There's a handful of guys that I was really, really proud of. And a lot of the guys that certainly got recognition after that game were the same guys that practiced and played the way that you would have practiced and then therefore played the way you would expect it. So for us, from an injury standpoint, the guys that didn't finish the game, C.K. Murray will be fine. He'll be available, ready to rock and roll tomorrow. And then Deshaun Womack is going to be day-to-day. We hope to have him back here by the end of the week and ready to rock and roll. Cole Skinner was fine. If we had to go back on offense, could have gone back out and finished the game. Same thing with Jacob Strand. Outside of that, we left it healthy and encouraged there. Turning the page for us, Southern Miss, kickoff on the Plains. We fully expect it to be our 23rd straight sellout. And man, I'm beyond geeked to have our guys here at home Saturday night. Man, just got goosebumps a little bit thinking about playing in Jordan-Hare for the first time. It'll be incredible. We challenged our guys to flip the page after we got done with meetings this morning, put it behind us, and fight like crazy to go 1-0 this week. So Southern Miss, another unique challenge just from a coaching staff standpoint. new head coach, was there as the offensive coordinator a year ago. New offensive coordinator, you feel like you have a decent – we feel like we've got a decent feel for what that'll look like. You know, quarterbacks played in a bunch of big games. They are explosive at running back. Play really hard up front. And then another team, you saw tempo a week ago. In terms of Baylor, it'll be similar in that regard. I would say our defense was helped drastically by seeing it every day. I think from being able to line up and go play ball and play it at a high level, it's helped that we've gotten to practice against it. It'll be very similar in terms of a team that's going to push the tempo and push the ball down the field some, which will be really good for us. Defensively, new defensive coordinator was also there on staff, first-time coordinator. They got to play a bunch of guys last week against Alcorn State. They played really hard. They varied a bunch of looks, but that game was over at halftime. And for us, you certainly wish you had some more film, but it'll be similar to how it was a week ago, where you kind of got to be ready for the unknown. Special teams-wise, they play hard. They're really sound. So it'll be a good challenge for us. But excited to be at home, excited to play a good opponent. I got a ton of respect for Blake and what he's been able to do throughout his career, both offensively and as a head coach. So it'll be a good game.
That was the head coach of the Tigers, Coach Alex Golish, again, giving his thoughts on all things Auburn and Baylor. Again, a little bit earlier on in the show, got to play some audio from a couple of the defensive players, Rayshon Pleasant, Jared Smith, as well as Coach DJ Durkin. And so, again, love being able to play that, get that insight, be able to hear firsthand what the coaches are thinking about, and a guy like Alex Golish that studies so much in the film room, it feels like, man, that's what he prides himself on. And so with what he talks about, it feels like he understands where this team needs to continue to go, what he liked from his team. And again, he talked about it, a team in Baylor that I think is going to be a lot better than people expected. We got to the point of, man, at some point you got to give DJ Lagway his flowers just for how well he played in there as well. But again, enjoy being able to play that and get his thoughts on everything in that side of things. We will take an early break here. I say early that it's 3:18. It's just the fact that usually our first segment is 22:23 when we're taking our first break, because we have one of our favorite graphs that I love looking at, and I know that Tripp does as well. It's the overall, did we really get beat that bad graph? And one of those that goes and takes so much of the stats of just the momentum of the emotions of the game, rather than simply looking at the box score and seeing what the final score looked like. They do this for all of the big-time games every single week. And so want to be able to dive into that, and also some breaking news in the MAC conference that we will discuss here as we continue on here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You're on the line with Christian Griffin and Tripp Upton. Be a part of the show by calling 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1685.
Back here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line, he is Tripp Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. We appreciate everybody for being here and spending some time with us on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. And we do want to get to the graph that we talk a whole lot about, somewhat as a joke, but it's so interesting and funny to look at. And weirdly enough, Auburn is on the right side of this, I say, because it's basically the exact opposite of where Auburn has been over the last handful of years. But before we dive into that, I know that there is a whole lot of drama from what happened in Ann Arbor this past weekend. Tripp, we got to watch it.
A whole lot of drama in the MAC.
In the MAC. We got to watch this from the outside of a hotel bar projector.
In Atlanta,
in Midtown, following Auburn's win, after going in and grabbing some dinner. We were standing on the other side of the street, just sitting around talking. All of a sudden, it was like, oh, holy cow, the game's right there. And so we went and watched, and as we know, Bryce Underwood throws the Hail Mary out of the back of the end zone. Western Michigan wins 12-7.
Not so fast, my friend.
Not so fast. They go to a review, and one of the more skeptical, suspect reviews that you're going to see in quite some time, they decide to put a 1 second back on the clock. And obviously, we have seen how that has played out. Michigan takes the snap and completes the Hail Mary in the end zone and rewards Michigan with a 13-12 victory. I would like to say with a with somebody here.
With a witness.
With a witness that as soon as they went to the review, not that it sounds like, oh, Christian called it, but it was just like.
But Christian called it.
This feels way too much like college football for something college football not to happen. The game should have been over. And I think it's almost the unanimous feeling that Western Michigan was robbed of a win. And even though Michigan sits at 1-0, everybody looks at Michigan as 0-1. The AP poll, which we'll get to here in just a few minutes, kind of reciprocates that as well.
Yeah.
But everybody has given so much props to the MAC, to the MAC, because of how they have handled everything. Again, the head coach and their athletic director have met with like the president and all of that and released their statements of, okay, we now have asked for clarification. We have got that clarification. We are understanding of the rules. And it was like, man, you guys are weirdly calm for a result like this. Like, did Michigan slide over an extra zero in whatever they were possibly going to pay you? Whatever the case may be, because it was very much like, man, if Georgia Southern would have played Georgia, or if Troy would have played Alabama, whatever the case may be, and like something like that happened, that would be absolutely hell. It would be hell raised everywhere, and there would not be the, we understand why something was ruled like this. Well, that was how it was handled, and everybody was like, okay, we're just going to kind of move on. But earlier today, the MAC commissioner, Dr. John Steinbrecher, released a statement that says as following. After further study and investigation, it is now evident that replay protocol was not properly followed in determining whether time remained on the game clock at the conclusion of Western Michigan versus Michigan's football game. The established replay protocol requires that the game clock displayed on the program feed be used in determining whether time remained. Essentially, what we talked about was there was a ghost clock or something that they resulted in that was kept on the field that looked different in the stadium, that looked different than what we saw on TV. This is saying, again, the game clock displayed on the program feed is to be used in determining whether whether time remained. Quote, instead, the Big Ten Conference replay crew relied upon the clock feed embedded within its replay system. As a result, 1 second was placed back on the clock and an additional play was awarded. This was not a judgment regarding the proper amount of time to place on the clock. It was an error in the application of the established replay protocol governing this specific end-of-game timing situation. Had the protocol been followed and the program feed clock been used, no additional play would have been awarded and Western Michigan would have won the game 12-7. Here's the kicker. As a result, the Mid-American Conference has submitted formal appeals to the NCAA FBS Oversight Committee and the College Football Playoff. The MAC is requesting that those bodies recognize Western Michigan as the actual winner of the game for purposes of their respective rankings, evaluations, and selection deliberations, and take such corrective action as may be within their authority. Western Michigan is basically saying, We now see, we call your raise on the table, but instead we're actually going to go back even further into the rule book and say this wasn't how it was supposed to be handled, despite you saying this is how it was handled. Western Michigan and the MAC conference is basically saying, change it, give Western Michigan the win. Will this happen? And the overall thought of, would we even be in this case if it was not in the big house and it was not the Michigan logo that was on the wrong end initially of a play like this?
If it was the, you know, if this was Western Michigan, Central Michigan, no, we're not talking about this. Maybe it's like a, man, that's kind of weird. But it's the fact that when you have a conference enforcing the rules of a game in which it is party to Michigan losing hurts the Big Ten because the college football playoff, mm-hmm. but you're having the Big Ten officiate it, logically, their clear objective would be to help Michigan, not Western Michigan.
Which is why, in a game like Auburn and Baylor, there are not SEC or Big 12 officials.
Right. It is a neutral party. And I think that that has got to be a standard when it comes to these things. You know, even if it's like a Missouri Valley refereeing crew, you know, I think that that is what needs to happen, because it allows for situations like this in which it's not one team against another in the same conference. It's not Auburn arguing with Birmingham. It's a conference versus a conference. And unfortunately, the Big Ten's going to win.
Wild that this is where we sit right now. We'll keep talking this again, the graph as well as the AP poll when we come back.
Halfway through hour number two, you're on the line with Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
Thirty more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line, and it's officially time. Did we really get beat that bad, graph time? This is... It's so much fun to look at, because does it truly mean like that much? No, but it's just so funny to see how many times the team that comes out on the wrong end of things is actually the team that statistically, according to like net success ratings, played a whole lot better. Looking at this in specifics, again, you can look up this graph, the did we get beat that bad, or the net success rates, and it shows all the FBS versus or FBS teams. And so looking at some of them, looking at the very first one, the perfect example, Troy beat Sam Houston 24-21, yet Troy played almost 200 points lower in success rate to Sam Houston, going to show you that if you just looked at this graph, it tells you that Sam Houston wins the game, and they win it pretty comfortably. On the flip side of things, you go and you see, okay, how badly did this team beat this other team? And Texas A&M, despite only being up 19-0 at halftime, they win 50-0 over Missouri State. Or is it Montana State? Missouri State, right?
Yes, Missouri State played Texas A&M.
Yeah, they went at 50-0, and despite some of the other scores looking a lot worse, net success rate gives the Aggies the biggest margin of success. That Texas A&M, that Aggies line sits at right around +400%. And so the Aggies, Ohio State, Iowa, and South Carolina all kind of in that really close comparative in terms of how badly they beat their opponents, which is interesting, because you go and you look at some of these games that are kind of sandwiched in the middle. LSU and Clemson are towards the, I don't want to say the middle, but LSU is about 80% of the way up. But, man, you feel like LSU absolutely
dominated. They should be the furthest right on this graph.
You would think so, just based off of how that looks. Yet, again, just based off of the success rate, Southern Cal and Fresno State, Miami, who absolutely dominated Stanford, is not as large as you would think. Oklahoma, who blanked UTEP, somewhat kind of in the middle. Alabama and ECU right there. Penn State, Florida, Indiana, all just kind of right in the middle.
It's so crazy to me seeing that UMass beat Rutgers as much as the defending national champions beat their G5 opponent.
In terms of respective success rate. UMass beat Rutgers by the same percentage that Indiana beat North Texas. I think that's a great way of looking at it.
Just shows how you know, the Big Ten, top to bottom, fantastic is what I've been told.
Meanwhile, Texas beat Texas State 59-7, yet Texas A&M beats Missouri State by more than double how badly on the success chart that Texas beat Texas State. Like, again,
it's such a great statistic to not say, like, okay, if you had to blank out the scoreboard, how did these teams really perform?
Yeah.
And I love it. I think this is fantastic. You look at some other ones, it's Oregon State played Houston really closely. I mean, that was a 13-point win for the Cougars, but comparatively, that's closer than what a 41-38 game two nights ago in Nashville between Ole Miss and Louisville.
Where does that sit? Oh, yeah, Ole Miss playing about
the same, but
about 0.05, about 50%. Wildly, UCLA, who beats Cal 45-24 is kind of right in there at the middle as well. Colorado, Nevada, Oregon, Tulsa, all right in there, kind of comparable to how badly they beat, again, respectively, Ohio State, Georgia Tech, Western Kentucky, Boise State, Memphis, not really beating Arkansas State that badly in terms of overall success, although they won that one 42-24. But the main reason that we look at this and highlight so much of this today before we dive into the top 25 to end today's program is because you look at Auburn and Baylor, and Auburn is on the lower side of this graphic in terms of net success rate. Looking at this, they would tell you that Baylor wins the football game. They would tell you it's very close, but just off of that prediction and the overall success rate, Baylor won the football game if you take away this overall score and you just look at the graph.
It's so, I mean, that makes sense. You look at some other ones, Western Michigan, Michigan, that hopefully will get flipped up to the right way. Wake Forest and Akron. Wake Forest basically got dominated by about just over minus 0.1 net
success
rate. Kind of
like that, 0.125, yeah.
Yeah, that 1-2-5, which if you look at what that would be comparatively to a win, that is about how bad. Let's see.
It's about Texas and Texas State.
Yeah, which is like, huh? How did you win that game?
Yeah, Wake Forest won that by 22. Yeah, it's wild to think.
I mean, a lot of this is what, like, if it's like you drive all the way down the field to turn the ball over.
Sure.
And then, or like special teams and interceptions and fumbles were defensive plays. I think this is a very offensive leaning graphic, but I think it's really interesting when these teams that are flipped, just like Auburn is this week. And a point I want to make, and I think this is a point that you're getting to, but I'd like to say it. How many times has Auburn been on the wrong side of this, mm-hmm. where Auburn is the team that lost, and it's like, man, Auburn should have won by 10 points.
Yep, that is the exact point that I was getting to. The fact that, again, whether this builds confidence is maybe not the direct point of this conversation, just because this is obviously not what you want it to look like in a win. Yet we've looked at graphs like this for so long over the last handful of years, and it's like, man, this Auburn team dominated whoever they were playing. They dominated, again, whether it's an SEC game or not, but somehow you look at this, and if you don't look at the score, yep, you'd say Auburn won the football game, and they won it pretty comfortably. But then you go look at the score over the last handful of years, and it's like, holy cow, how in the world did Auburn find a way to lose that football game? So at the bare minimum, how nice is it to be able to sit there and look at a graph like this in a game that maybe Auburn shouldn't have won, yet in the new regime, you can't talk about mental toughness, you can't talk about a lack of preparation, you can't talk about any of that, because that is all that this coaching staff has preached, that's all that Coach Alex Golish is. And if this is what it looks like to be that ugly win to get to 1-0, I've referenced that multiple times here already on the week of there will be a time throughout SEC play where all of the coaches will be able to go back to the feelings that these players had on the field in this Auburn-Baylor game and use that as a counterpoint to get you a win in a game that you either probably shouldn't win or in a game that you either need to stop or you need to go down and win the football game.
I think that that's it's a good point. And no matter the circumstances, no matter what the yardage looks like, no matter what the turnover ratio looks like, the only stat that people care about is the win. And that's what they're going to celebrate and learning from what happened last week to get to the next one.
It's so funny to look at all of things like this. And we'll continue to look at these graphs throughout college football season because, again, this is almost the sub-bullet point that I use when I make fun of the box score viewers of like, okay, well, tell me you did not watch the football game whatsoever. If you saw that this team won 27-10, it's like, oh, yeah, it was a comfortable win, but it was anything but that. They do this for college basketball as well. And so it's just so interesting being able to look at some of these graphs and see that, yeah, Ole Miss, who beat Louisville by 3, took care of business in the same or lesser format that Nevada took care of Western Kentucky, although Nevada won 49-14. Like it's things like this that don't make sense unless you truly are able to look at it, and maybe it's just because I love like the analytical side of this, but just looking at the, again, the net success rates in week one for the graph of, did we really get beat that bad? And Baylor, again, was, in terms of the chart, the favorite to win this football game based off of what happened right, based off of what went wrong. But the Auburn Tigers are 1-0, and Baylor Bears are in Waco preparing as their record sits at 0-1. We will take an early break just because I wanted to get that thought out there. I wanted to have a full segment diving into the brand new AP Poll Top 25, get you some of those live updates, some of the biggest risers, some of the biggest fallers, and where the Auburn Tigers sit just outside, still receiving votes, but maybe not as many as they were last week. We'll talk about that and wrap up the show right after this.
You are on the line with Christian Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
All right, we're back here. Not quite wrapping up the show. Still a little bit to get to here this afternoon, but we are back here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. We just got done talking about one of our favorite graphs of all of college football, all of college sports, and just sports in general, because, again, they have it for basketball season, they have it for baseball season, I believe it's for the NFL season as well, which gets started, tomorrow night?
Yeah. Right? Did you see the thing? It was Raheem Morris, former Falcons head coach and Rams defensive coordinator. They had the game in Australia this week, and his birthday was on, I think, either the 4th or the 5th,
yeah.
And they crossed the international date line on the 2nd, and it was already a turn to the 4th, so it skipped his birthday.
Basically, he did not have a birthday.
He did not have a 50th birthday.
So, we'll remember it. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Raheem Morris. I had my great-grandma, her birthday was on leap day. So she always would joke, like, she was like 80-something, and she's like, actually, I'm only 25 or 24. I'm like, no, Mimi, you're a little old, but that's funny.
Good one, Mimi.
Atlanta Mimi. She's a beast.
So AP Top 25 is, in fact, here. It was released week two of the Associated Press, and again, working our way rather quickly, not too many thoughts. The changes that we saw were the changes that I feel like we thought we were going to see. 25 through 21, Virginia works its way into the top 25. Louisville stays at 24. Missouri, 23. Houston, 22. Iowa, 21. Any big thoughts on that side?
People would be concerned that Houston only beat Oregon State by 13, but I'm going to continue to pound the pavement for that Oregon State team. I think they are way better than they were, that people are expecting them to be. So I think that'll be a good win at the end of the season. Missouri, congrats. You did what you were supposed to do. And good for the committee to keep, or the AP voters to keep Louisville in, because they did more than they expected to.
Yeah,
and
I agree with that.
I think they are a top 25 team, if not the second or third best team in the ACC.
Yeah, Utah moves up a spot. Washington drops two with their 24-10 win over Washington State in the Apple Cup. Tennessee, 18. SMU, 17. Penn State, 16. Again, I don't have a thought provoking me one way or the other in terms of how dare you do this, shaking my crooked finger. It's kind of just, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's very, really fine. I mean, SMU, good for them for getting moved up two spots. I think a lot of these people moved up legitimately because of a certain team that dropped out of the top 25.
Yes.
But
I would be willing to – a team that is being asked to get its win revoked by the MAC conference, which we just dove into. I am surprised that Southern Cal stayed at 14. I know that they were big favorites over Fresno State. I think it was like 24.5-point favorites. But a lot of people were expecting the Bulldogs to keep this one close. And the idea that Jaden Maiava, who is absolutely terrific, if you listen to this show at all, you know just how much I love Jaden Maiava. It was Makai Lemon last year, but the two of those together. I'm a little bit surprised that they stayed at 14 just based off of that Southern Cal logo. But
do you think they should have moved up?
I do. I think they should have moved up.
I don't think they should. I don't, because who are you going to put them over? Texas Tech did what they were supposed to do. Alabama did what they were supposed to do. Oklahoma A&M did what they were supposed to do. I don't think they're better than Ole Miss or anyone above that. I think
I wouldn't say moving them into the top 10, but if you have Texas Tech dropping one just because Alabama jumped you, I mean, from the standpoint of Fresno State would beat more than half the teams that these teams played.
I don't know about Eastern Carolina. I do like Mitch Griffs, and I think that they would be slightly better. Missouri State's is a fine team out of the CUSA. They'd beat UTEP, and they'd probably beat they'd beat Abilene Christian or whoever. Yes. Texas Tech,
which is why that's the main reason. Again,
but look,
if you put them at 14 versus 12, again, I'm not nitpicking this
fair.
Too much.
I think 14's fine.
Also with 2-0 versus some of these 1-0, but sure. Again, I don't stand one way or the other too strong. Texas Tech again drops one. They move to 13 out. They flip with Alabama, who jumps up to 12th. Oklahoma drops a spot. Not necessarily looking at them for dropping a spot, more so of the case of LSU jumping three spots. But how wild is this? Just the SEC logjam. Alabama, Oklahoma, Texas A&M, Ole Miss, LSU from 12 to 8. Just dogpiled, stacked up in the Southeastern Conference.
I want to make a point about this 13 through 10. Each of them play I'm going to say three out of the four play P4 teams. One of them plays Oregon State. A&M, Arizona State. Oklahoma goes on the road to Michigan. Alabama goes on the road to Kentucky. And Texas Tech goes on the road to Oregon State. If I were to tell you one of these teams were to lose, who is it most likely to be?
Ooh.
If you were to guarantee a loss here, because I feel like we haven't had a crazy upset in terms of ranked v. ranked.
For no reason whatsoever, give me Michigan to beat Oklahoma.
To get the bounce back?
Do I think it happens? No, but college football is college football, and for some reason that would be the Bryce Underwood game into where Michigan can go, yeah, suck on that college football. Just for absolutely no reason whatsoever.
If A&M was going to Tempe to play Arizona State, that would be my game for sure. Yeah, I do like Texas A&M, but I think that Sun Devil Stadium is not an easy place to play by any means. I love Kenny Dillingham.
The Aggies 14.5-point favorites right now.
Maybe that the Texas Tech quarterback situation is worse than we thought, and Oregon State at home pulls a win. And I don't want to say this because I'm an Auburn fan, but Kentucky, Alabama, I mean, is an interesting one as well. But I guess I'd have to agree with you. I don't love it, but if you had to guarantee one, most likely it's going to be the one with all the hype around it, Michigan, Oklahoma.
Yeah, it is interesting that a team that is eighth right now in the AP poll, the LSU Tigers, received 5 first-place votes. I know that was something we discussed
more than Georgia,
Sundays
who didn't receive
one. And that's more than Georgia, who is the number 2 team. Georgia did not receive a first-place vote, which is...
So basically they were like everyone's number 2.
Yeah, every single voter had Georgia basically as number 2 or number 3 from what it looks like right now. 7 through 1 quickly, because you could interchange them and I would not really argue with you whatsoever. Miami at 7, Oregon at 6. They dropped 4 spots after their close win over Boise State. Indiana at 5, Texas at 4, Notre Dame at 3, Georgia at 2, and Ohio State at 1. Man, you look, though, at that top 15, what you mentioned, there's going to be some shakeups regardless of whoever wins, whoever loses. There will be some movements when you look at this time next week at week 3.
Yeah, Ohio State, Texas. I mean, one of those teams has to lose that game. That'll be interesting. I don't foresee Oklahoma State playing Oregon close. Maybe that Tulsa just dominated them on the line of scrimmage, but that was a very bad loss for the Cowboys, a team that a lot of people had as college football playoff dark horses. But I don't see outside of – like, if you were to give me a stat, if I could bet over 1.5 top 10 teams lose, I think I'd still take the under. I think Texas, Ohio State is the only guaranteed one, obviously. But outside of that, I mean, Western Kentucky, Georgia, no. Rice, Notre Dame, probably not, but it'd be really funny, Brandon. Howard, Indiana, no. Again, Oklahoma State, Oregon, no. Florida A&M in Miami on Thursday night,
yeah,
no. And then Louisiana Tech, LSU, Charlotte, Ole Miss, no.
Other teams receiving votes, Boise State with 86, Florida with 83, Michigan with 69. Nice. Arizona with 33, Memphis with 23, South Carolina 19, Western Michigan 12.
Surprised South Carolina is not higher.
I kind of agree with
their
that.
Their offense looks phenomenal.
They did. Michigan with 11, Navy at 10, UCLA 7, Virginia Tech with 6, Illinois with 6, James Madison and Minnesota.
Minnesota.
Both with 4, Colorado with 3.
What are we doing?
Auburn, Arizona State, and Vanderbilt all received 2 votes to get into the top 25.
I mean, I think that that's right where Auburn should be. Surprised Colorado got votes. Surprised Pittsburgh didn't get more votes when Mason Heinsnickel throws for a program-tying 7 touchdowns against a nobody, but still good for Pittsburgh, I guess, and Pat Narduzzi. I don't know, but also interesting, Auburn, Vanderbilt tied with the same number of votes. I'd probably still take Auburn over Vanderbilt.
Tomorrow's show going to be a lot of high school coverage from 2 to 3, and then we begin turning the page to Southern Miss in a big-time Week 2 slate tomorrow afternoon. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. We appreciate everybody for being here with us, and sports are so much better with an opinion, whether you love them, whether you hate them. We're back tomorrow to talk all about them, and we hope you'll be there to join us.